The following podcast is for healthcare professionals only. All views expressed belong to our speakers and don't necessarily reflect those of Nestlé Health Science. Hello and welcome to Inside Medical Nutrition Podcast, a podcast powered by Nestlé Health Science and hosted by me, Dr. Linya Patel. Today's episode is on improving medication administration for people with dysphagia. For this episode, I'm delighted to have two experts in the field. Professor David Wright, who is a professor of health services research at Leicester University, and Jan Flynn, who is a CEO of Change Med Limited. Jan and David, I'm delighted to be having this conversation with you both. And ahead of recording this podcast, I was reading your bios, and I'm very, very impressed by your expertise and insight. We've got 30 minutes to draw out as much information as I can from you. So let's get started. And to begin with, I would love to learn more about you both and learn more about your journeys as pharmacists. So David, perhaps we begin with you first. Could you tell us a little bit about your career and your interest in medicines and dysphagia?
Yeah, sure. So my career started as a community pharmacist up in York. I used to look after care homes and supply lots of medicines, and it always shocked me how many medicines I was taking to the care homes every week and how little insight I had into those medicines. And I actually got the offer of a PhD a year later, so I went back into academia. And that PhD was in care homes and the pharmacist role of care homes and how we could optimise the care of residents through pharmaceutical knowledge and skills. So I used to visit the care homes, about 20 of them across West Yorkshire on a monthly basis, take blood levels, review the medicines, work with the care home staff. And one day, one of the staff said to me, "Oh, this person's Parkinson's isn't responding to their treatment. We can't get the medicines down them."
Okay.
And I said, "Well, what's the medicine?" She said, "It's Mandipar capsules, and she can't swallow them." And I said, "Do you realise there's a dispersible formulation, don't you?" And she said, "Is there? No one's ever told us that." And I just suddenly realised how that little bit of knowledge about there's other options available to you beyond the straightforward capsule made a world of difference. When I went back a month later, you know, they were saying her symptoms were much better controlled. She was much happier just from swapping from the capsule to dispersible. So that's kind of where I got my first interest and insight into the fact that dysphagia wasn't possibly as well managed or supported in care homes and older people as it could be. And then I had a master's student from hospital saying to me, this is after I finished my PhD, "I think they're crushing a lot of medicines on the wards. I'm a bit worried about it." I said, "They don't crush medicines. They cost thousands of pounds. They spent millions of pounds designing them. Surely they're not crushing them." I said, "But actually, I don't know much about wards. I know more about care homes. So should we ask them the question? Because I suspect if it's happening in the wards, it's happening in the care homes." So we sent a survey out to care homes, which basically at the centre of it said, "Do you crush tablets?" And nobody replied, and those who did said no. So so I started to work with a company who were running care homes training days. And at the start of the day, I gave the survey out, and I was a bit horrified by the results. About 80% of staff said they crushed tablets almost regularly all the while. The other 20%, I now realise, were just lying. They did crush tablets. They weren't going to tell me. And it's just standard practice. And as a pharmacist, when I worked out what they were crushing and what they were up to, I realised how much harm that could potentially cause the residents. But equally, there was a real knowledge gap, and there was something that needed addressing. And I guess that's where my research career has gone, partially about how we can help people with dysphagia and how we can help healthcare professionals give medicines most appropriately.
Yeah, no, that's brilliant. And I'm definitely going to be asking a question about crushing tablets a little bit later. But if you just tell me a little bit about what's your typical day like at the moment?
Ah, well, now it's a different day nowadays. I'm head of a school of healthcare, so I look after a variety of professions and their training. And 3 days of the week is managing that and building that school up. University of Leicester, it's a new school. It started small, we're getting bigger. But for 2 days a week, I do research and a couple. One of those projects is looking at flu vaccination in care homes and trying to get care home staff vaccinated. And the other project is looking at stopping medicines when people are in hospital. Because we know when people go to hospital, particularly older people, 50% of their medicines are possibly inappropriate. We also found that they're still inappropriate when they leave. So we've developed this project to get those medicines stopped if we can, whilst they're under the care consultant, whilst they've got a ward pharmacist looking after them. And that project's running across 20 hospitals in the UK at the moment, I will have results in a few years, but they're the big projects I'm managing alongside my proper day job of being a manager, I guess.
Yeah, that's brilliant. And Jan, how about you? What's your background and what's your journey?
So my background, I did a degree in biochemistry and toxicology and ended up in the pharmaceutical industry, which has been where I've been ever since. It's a fantastic place to be. And no 2 days are ever the same. So I've worked for some of the big companies, a lot of the some of the smaller companies, medical device companies, and done everything from R&D through regulatory affairs to sales, marketing, commercial. Okay. So a massive breadth of knowledge. And for one of the companies that specialised in oral liquid medicines is where David and I crossed paths and started working together on various projects about educating patients and healthcare professionals about the different types of formulations that were available. That's been a real passion of mine. Because, you know, the pharmaceutical industry is very tailored towards tablets and capsules and mass market, but there's a lot of vulnerable patients out there, elderly patients, patients with strokes, and children who the solid dose big tablets and capsules really aren't appropriate for.
And do you have any special projects on at the go?
We do. David and I do quite a lot of advisory boards for companies, particularly in this area, and getting healthcare professionals, key opinion leaders together. So we've got some interesting work on the go that is looking at how can specialists educate healthcare professionals in primary care around some key issues.
Okay, well, perfect two people to have for this podcast, because today's episode's title is Improving Medication Administration for People with Dysphagia. So I'm going to move now and talk a little bit more specifically around dysphagia. So we'll go back to you, David, as a pharmacist. What are the main things that you've learned about dysphagia?
As a pharmacist, the thing that shocked me was how important dysphagia is to patients and how it directly impacts on their life. I remember watching this video where this person described how her life stopped the day she had dysphagia. And I hadn't really thought about it, but everything we do in our lives is around food and drink. We're going out, we're socializing. The first thing you asked me today was, have you got a cup of coffee there to hold while you're having the meeting? And it's kind of central to all of our activities. And as a pharmacist, my life has been revolved around medicines. That's all I ever think about. And I suddenly realized there's a patient here whose life is being impacted, puts things in perspective. And it kind of also made me realize that actually with dysphagia, the priorities, food, the liquid. Yeah. You know, we've got to keep the person alive, we've got to give them the right nutrients, we've got to hydrate them. And then I can see why medicines kind of get forgotten. And why kind of, you know, the last thing we think about, because they're all much bigger priorities than the medicines. And I suppose realizing that is maybe as it's my role, I guess, or my research, to try and raise the profile of the medicines in that sort of equation so that we get those right at the same time. Because if we don't get those right, as we saw with a Parkinson's person, it can seriously affect your quality of life.
No, absolutely. And Jan, do you have anything to add there from your experience and perspective?
Yeah, I think the vulnerable patients tend to be the ones that pharmaceutical companies don't focus on in a lot of ways, because most companies are really set up for producing lots of tablets, you know, millions of tablets or millions of capsules. And focusing on the smaller groups of patients who are quite difficult to treat tends to be a second thought for them, because the pharmaceutical industry, although we are there to help patients, we're also there to make money, and therefore the big companies are looking at what's the most cost-effective way to do this. And sadly, doing things for particularly small groups of patients can prove to be quite expensive. and therefore and the small volumes don't really lend themselves to the usual pharmaceutical companies out there.
What's interesting, because I'm a dietitian, so we think of food and fluid in terms of textures, but I've never necessarily thought about it in terms of medications having to kind of have that as well. So if you give me some of the advice, or perhaps that you would give patients or carers who are prescribing medicines for people that actually can't take medicines, what would that advice be? Maybe to start with you, David, from a kind of care home perspective, because you've worked in those settings a lot.
Well, I think it's the same wherever the settings was. The first thing is, do they still need that medicine? Is it working? One thing that shocks me is how often medicines are started, never followed up on, and we don't really know if they've actually had any impact. And I was surprised by how many medicines I could stop in the care home. And similarly, in our big hospital study, there were many medicines that were the right thing at the time when they were started, but by the time a person gets to a certain age, the benefits may no longer be there, and the risks may be too high, and that ratio has changed. I think dysphagia definitely changes that ratio as well. So this is the time to ask the question: is it worth it? Should we stop it at this point? So that's the first thing.
Great.
The next thing is there another route we can go down with the medicine? Do we have to go down the oral route? There are alternative formulations, patches, and such like. But actually, they're quite limited, but we should always consider that, because if we can avoid the oral route, we save a lot of problems. But then obviously it's formulation, and which formulation is best for this person and for the nature of the dysphagia they have. And that's where I kind of started. I set up a website, swallowingdifficulties.com, where you type the name of the medicine and it tells you what formulations are available. It also tells you whether it's safe to crush them or not. So if you can find a formulation which can give it to the person or take it without altering it in any way, that's much better than having to go down the route of having to crush the tablet. And that's kind of your next option, but kind of the worst option available. So we can avoid that. That's what we should do. And then if we're going to crush, there's a whole load of questions we need to ask. I knew you were going to ask me about that, so I'll come back to that in a minute. But then after that, the other things that are really important are texture, as you say. When you whatever medicine you give, whatever formulation, if it's a liquid or if you crush something and mix it, the texture's got to be right for that patient. And I think, again, we don't think about that often enough. And we often then mix things with foods without thinking about what impact that has. And one of the issues with crushing, and I saw this in a care home, was they crushed the tablets and opened the capsules and then sprinkled it on the breakfast and then fed that to the resident. And I have to say, the breakfast didn't look that palatable as it was, and then without having all that stuff put on top. And something I've learned as I've gone on is how bad many drugs taste. So when you make a liquid medicine, you make it so that the flavor's hidden. When you make a tablet, the flavor of the drug is really hidden because it's covered in lots of other ingredients in there. So you don't actually get the full impact. You crush it, you get the full impact. Crushing and sprinkle it on your food is completely unpalatable. So the texture, you're absolutely right, is really important. And after all that, you've got to think about, well, I've got to record what I've done, so that if anything goes wrong, people know that I've gone to take a sensible approach to this, as a structured approach, and come to the right decision for the patient. At the centre of all that is the patient and the carer, all about asking them what they want, what their preferences are. And interestingly, we found that most patients like to have a discussion about stopping the medicines. Healthcare professionals very often think, oh, patients want to take them, they love them. But actually, we found over 90% said, no, please have that discussion. There's definitely some medicines I don't like taking, and if I could stop taking them, I would. So it's about changing hearts and minds, I guess, so that people go at these things in a different way.
My goodness, that response, there's been so much in there, such a rich response. And what I want to just do is unpick a little bit of that. And Jan, I'm going to ask you a question, because you come from the pharmaceutical industry. Most medicines out there are prescribed as tablets and capsules. Why is that?
It's because most patients can take tablets and capsules. If they haven't got a swallowing difficulty, or if they haven't got a phobia about swallowing tablets, and some people do, it's the easy way to deliver a drug. And it's also Tends to be quite stable. It's in a dry environment. You might see some capsules or tablets that are in some very thick or interesting blister packs, and that might be because their moisture breaks down the active ingredient. But it's mainly because most people can take them, and they're easy to take. Once you move on to liquids, you're in an aqueous environment, a water environment. That can cause the active ingredient to break down. So stability can be a huge issue. And also things like when you're crushing tablets and they're mixing it with water to try and help the patient take it, nobody knows what's happening to that active ingredient. Some of them are very sensitive and break down quite quickly. Some of them are sensitive to light and have got coatings on the outside. And if the light gets through to them, then that can affect how the active ingredient is broken down, and whether there's sufficient active ingredient in there to actually do its job.
Yeah. And I guess with liquid medicines as well, you know, David kind of alluded to this earlier. I suppose it has to taste kind of nice. So maybe it's a bit more expensive to make. Is that right?
That's right. I mean, yes. Well, some of them taste okay. because we've managed to make most, you know, everything tastes okay. Because most active ingredients are actually quite bitter and quite unpalatable. I don't know whether you've ever, you know, broken a paracetamol tablet in half because they're quite big and to swallow it, and the taste is revolting. And an awful lot of active ingredients do taste quite bitter and unpleasant. And I've lost my train of thought here.
You're talking about breaking a paracetamol down and tasting bitter.
So making liquids is not as simple as people think it is, and actually it can be more complex than making tablets and capsules because of it being an aqueous solution. You have to also put in things like preservatives, stabilizers to make sure the pH doesn't change, because if the acidity of a liquid changes, it could precipitate out the active ingredient or break down the active ingredient. There's so much going on in a liquid that isn't going on in a tablet, and therefore it's very complex. And because they're not made in huge manufacturing plants in general, it's the economies of scale. Tablets you can make by the millions. Oral liquids tend to be made in smaller quantities, and therefore you haven't got the economies of scale, and therefore they're more expensive.
Yeah. And is there, I mean, a bias in terms of what doctors like prescribing more than other times? I mean, are they prone to kind of prescribing your tablets because maybe they're more accessible, or is there no necessarily a trend?
Yeah. I think there's a lack of knowledge sometimes about what's available, which is why we have got the swallowingdifficulties.com website, because they just don't know what alternatives are available. There has been in the past some very expensive oral liquids out there. There's a group of products called specials where if there isn't a licensed product available, there are companies who will make you a special, which is the active ingredient, either manufactured the same way as you would manufacture an ordinary product, or it may be crushing a tablet and suspending it in some sort of fancy suspending agent. But they're not licensed, and therefore sometimes the cost to the NHS is not regulated. The cost to the NHS is not regulated, and so there was a probably about 10 years ago, maybe there was a lot of issues about the pricing of specials, and A lot of doctors got stung by that and think that all oral liquids, medicines are very expensive. They are more expensive than tablets and capsules because of the economies of scale, but they're not as always as astronomically expensive as doctors think they're going to be.
Okay, so the message I'm hearing, and correct me if I'm wrong, is if we go back to tablets and capsules, we shouldn't be crushing them. Is that right?
Some of them you can.
Okay,
It's
it can get
not
complicated.
as
It's not
simple as
quite as simple as that. Okay.
sadly
So,
not.
if I am able to crush a tablet or a capsule, how then, and this is a question for you, David, is somebody going to administer then that medication to a patient who's got dysphagia?
So some tablets actually have crushable in the name. Like Epilim crushable is designed for children, and the tablets designed for breaking down. Generally, you just add water to it and give it. The issue comes when you've got someone with some form of aspiration, and you need to give something with the right texture.
In nutrition, we give thickness. Can I put some thickness in there?
That's what I was going to say. So as we come to the thickeners, so very often, well, almost always, manufacturers don't recommend a thicker. They leave it to the carer or the patient themselves to decide how to thicken it. And you know, if you've got to thicken it, you have no choice. Use the thickener. That's the right thing to do. The thing is, we have no idea what's safe and what works. So what you have to do if you're going to thicken something is make sure you're aware of, you know, how well it was working beforehand by the things we use to monitor for how things work. And then just ensure that you continue to monitor those afterwards to see whether the thickeners had any effect. My suspicion is in many cases it doesn't, but there is evidence that some thickeners with some medicines can completely remove the whole effect of the medicine because they bind the medicine up. So it goes in the stomach, it doesn't get released into the bloodstream, and therefore the patient gets no benefit. And that's why it's really important if you are thickening, is putting the patient notes so that if we find that all of a sudden it's not working, the doctor or prescriber doesn't then think, oh, well, I'll just increase the dose or I'll stop the drug altogether. But I'll think about changing the thickener or think about some other way of giving it before we do that. And the worst case scenario is someone's dose is continues to be increased because the drug's not working. And we've seen this, and it's usually because the patient's not taking it, not because they're on a thickener. And then all of a sudden, someone gives them that new dose and they actually get the full amount, and then they get some terrible side effect as a result. So with thickeners, there's no evidence either way, as in, you know, we don't know what's safe and what's not. Most publications I've seen have been in Japan for medicines we don't use in the UK. So it's a matter of using the thickener, monitoring for effectiveness, and recording it in the notes so that everybody knows it's going on and not hiding the fact.
And I guess, because medicines don't have the texture ratings and because it sounds like it's so complicated, it's about the recording because in the future there's not going to be some texture ratings for medicines, is there? It's
Well, I've been asking companies to do this, but I've realized they won't. And the reason they won't is once they put a texture rating on that medicine, it limits the market in which it can be used. So if they say, oh, it's ITSE rating, whatever, five, then people only prescribe it for patients who need that. And so obviously that it's not in their interest to limit the market in which their product can be sold, particularly if, you know, the medicine is then thickened by other people or thinned by other people to get it to where we need it to be.
Okay. And Jan, would this be the same for liquid medicines if I'm using a thickener?
Yes, absolutely. We don't know what the effect of a thickener is, and therefore, as a pharmaceutical company, we couldn't say whether it was safe or not to do. In an ideal world, we would have a oral liquid version of every product in every thickness. But that even cuts down the use of that product to such small quantities of patients that the price would be
Go
absolutely
up.
astronomical. So yes, it's something that we would love to do as a company, but to actually understand how that works and then the costs of developing alongside a product, could we develop alongside somebody like Nestlé to look at is there a, you know, how would you thicken this product, and does the thickener have any alteration in the release of the active ingredient?
Yeah. Or is a solution just finding alternatives to tablets, capsules, and liquids? And
Yeah,
the alternatives?
there is, I think, you know, but are they acceptable to patients? I think the alternatives are things like injectables, which
Okay.
are very expensive. You have to have people who can actually give those injections, unless you can give subcut injections to yourself. Patches, the technologies around patches are improving, but if you've got a large molecule that doesn't go through skin, how do you administer that product? Nasal sprays, actuated dosing, things around those can be quite tricky, and not all products are suitable to go by those.
There are, I might answer as well, actually. There are some clever tablets being created at the moment. So there's sprinkles, where it's actually,
Oh.
they're like, they're that small, it's almost called a sprinkle. And they actually say you can give that and mix that with anything and thicken it up. And there are mini tablets, which are slightly bigger than sprinkles. But the beauty of all of them are they're designed to hide the flavor within them. And they can be designed to release the medicine as you want it releasing, because tablets are designed to release at a certain rate. Once you crush it, you release the drug really quickly, which really opens you up to getting side effects. Also means the body clears the drug out quicker, which means you end up a period of time where the drug's not working at all. So with sprinkles and mini tablets, these may be the way forward for these patients. But again, the question is there a big enough market to make these things sustainable when companies like to make the bigger tablets? But myself, I prefer sprinkles. I have to say, it'd be a lot easier to take them and swallow them with a glass of water.
Yeah, and I suppose each dosage of sprinkles, I suppose, would be quite clear. It's not like,
Yeah.
you can kind of have a generous sprinkle of
No.
something. No. Okay.
Like you take a liquid medicine and a glug will do. Yeah, it's not how you take it. They come in a little sachet, and the whole
Okay.
sachet is kind of the dose that you need to take.
Okay. David, earlier you mentioned your website, and I guess that, just having this conversation has opened my mind so much about the complexity of the different types of medicines, and particularly in something like dysphagia. So is your website updated all the time in terms of, if I was literally putting any medicine up there, if sprinkles had just come onto the market, then that would be reflected on the website?
Yeah, we update it, I think, 3 monthly. And so there's natural textbooks which tell you what medicines are on the market. But actually, because the pharmacy industry knows about our website, they contact us regularly to say, can you
Okay.
put our new product on there as part of their marketing approach, because they want people to be aware of those new formulations. But the website is more than what the formulation is. It also says whether you can crush it or not.
Brilliant.
And it'll say whether there's licensed products. And if they're licensed, it'll say you shouldn't really crush, because you should always go down the license route first. But on there's also lots of educational materials as well for people explaining exactly what a tablet is and what the impact is of crushing a tablet and inhaling them, and lots of interesting bits of information we know are accessed by a whole variety of people wanting to understand medicines a lot better.
So, David, I want to reach tablets.
Well, as we said earlier, we can crush some tablets, but you can't tell by looking which ones can and can't be crushed. And the thing is, they're quite clever things. People have spent a lot of time thinking about that drug and how to get it in the body and how to get it at the right rate. Getting it in too quickly, you get side effects. Getting it in too slowly, it never gets to the point at which it works. So we have normal tablets which are not coated and they're designed to be released in a certain way. Just crushing them can actually end up them not working as well or causing side effects. But most tablets without special coatings are probably okay to crush. If a tablet's got enteric coating on, or it's called gastro-resistant, this means it can't break down in the stomach. It's got a special coating on to protect the drug from the acid in the stomach, or to protect the stomach from the drug in the tablet. So these gastro-resistant tablets are there for, but for either protecting the stomach or protecting the drug itself, and the drug then gets released further down. The other reason actually for having that coating is to get the drug released further down where the disease is happening. So there's things like Crohn's disease, where you want the drug released in the intestine and not in the stomach. So if you break that coating up, then you're going to either harm the patient or make the drug not work, or really cause some impact. So those tablets should never be crushed. But again, you won't know something's enterocoated just by looking, or sometimes it's not that obvious in the name. The bigger one, though, to worry about is what's called modified release. Many years ago now, we realized patients don't like taking tablets three or four times a day. In fact, they don't. So if you give something three or four times a day, they take it once or twice and miss an odd dose. So what the pharmaceutical industry have done is actually put all the drug, four doses into one tablet, or four or two doses into one tablet, so that it's released slowly over the whole day. And that's called a modified release. So that means the patient takes it once a day or twice a day. The problem is, if you crush them, you're not getting a single dose. You're getting a double dose or quadruple dose, and they can be fatal if you crush those tablets. And again, sometimes you can't tell by looking, or you definitely can't tell by looking, but the name doesn't give it away so obviously. So those two types of tablets, enteric-coated, modified-release, should never really be crushed. The other type are those that are film-coated. Now, film coatings are there sometimes to protect the drug because of the moisture causes the drug to break down. But more often than not, they're there because the actual drug tastes that bad. So if you ever had an ibuprofen tablet, they're pink. And they're pink either because they've got a pink sugar coating or a pink film coating. If you ever take an ibuprofen tablet, crush it in your mouth, and then curse me to high heaven. It's horrible, it really is. And then think about, if you put that in a mix of other tablets and crush that up and then give that to someone, imagine what that feels like for the patient. And the only other thing to add is we did a big study across a number of hospitals where we watched medicines being given. And we found if patients hadn't got dysphagia, the error rate was one patient in seven would get an error on their medicines. If they got dysphagia, it's one in three. And that's because people are doing odd things with the medicines they shouldn't be doing to try and get the patient to take them. And therefore, dysphagia itself increases the risk from the medicines. And therefore, by crushing tablets as a routine practice, it then means that we increase the chances of errors. And so try and not make it routine, make it an exception. So when people do it, they do it in a very considered way, check to make sure there's no special coatings, and check to make sure the thing is palatable to the patient before they actually go down that route.
Wow, fascinating. Thank you.
To add to that, if you actually open a capsule that isn't designed to do that, and it will say in the prescribing information and the summary product characteristics that a drug has, whether you can or can't do that, you're then using a product either off-license or in an unlicensed way. So off-license, you might use a product in a different age group than the product is licensed for. But it becomes unlicensed if you crush the tablet or open the capsule, and it becomes that you're manufacturing a product. Then the liabilities of doing that can be quite difficult, because the pharmaceutical company has a level of liability as long as you're using the product in the way that it is should be prescribed. But if you go and do something different, like crushing the tablet when it shouldn't be, the liabilities then fall on either the prescriber who has prescribed it to be crushed, or to the administrator who has taken it upon themselves to do that. So there's quite a lot of legal ramifications if something bad happens to the patient and there's an issue.
Thank you. I wouldn't have thought of that. We must draw this conversation to a close. And before we do, what I'd love, and I'll start with you, Jan, is for you to give us your three main takeaways from today's conversation.
So firstly, I think it's important to understand the medicine and what can and can't be crushed. And as a pharmaceutical company, you spend millions on building a beautiful tablet that somebody then puts between two spoons and messes it up. That oral liquids are important and just part of the different types of products that could be given to a patient who has dysphagia. So there's it's not just the only answer, but it's probably the most common answer these days are oral liquid medicines. that yes, they are expensive because of the economies of scale. But if you've got a small number of patients who actually need a product, then it's not a huge cost to the NHS. It's about using them in the right patients, and making sure that vulnerable patients are given the best medicines so that they can to get the best clinical outcome.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And yourself, David?
So, reading the textbook, it says dysphagia is a symptom, which I think downplays its importance. Dysphagia is something that really impacts on patients' quality of life. It's really important we get the food and liquids into them, but don't forget the medicines. That's my first message. The second one is if someone's got dysphagia and you're struggling with the medicines, the first question isn't what route or what formulation. The first question is, do they really still need this? Is this safe? And then ask the questions about routes and formulation. And then the third thing is, if you've got someone in front of you who's on a number of medicines, you don't know what to do with them, and you've seen someone crushing them and put them in a pestle and mortar, which I've seen happen on numerous occasions, go and ask for advice. Either you can go to our website and you can type in the drug name and it'll tell you what options are available to you, but actually speak to your pharmacist. They know what's available. They know what those medicines are that are being crushed, and they'll tell you what options are available for you to go and ask your doctor or prescriber to give to you instead.
And I will ask you just to give me the name of your website again. I know we'll put it into the show notes, but I think it'll be important for listeners to kind of hear what the URL is.
Swallowingdifficulties.com.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much both for your time and your expertise and all the practical information that you've given. I've really, really enjoyed this conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Inside Medical Nutrition. If you enjoyed the podcast and found it useful, please share it with your colleagues. Consider subscribing so that you never miss an episode. For more information on this topic, please visit the Nestlé Health Science N+ Hub.